Hi. I was giving everybody a couple more minutes to come if they wanted to come late because it's been lunch, and lunch takes a while. So if people straggle in, that's absolutely fine. We'll just move forward. My name is Michelle Phoenix, and I'm an MK and a TCK. Does everybody know what TCK means? Anybody not know what TCK means? Okay, a third culture kid. Now you know. That's all it took. Okay, that was easy. Are there any MKs in the house? Anybody here who is an MK? You are. Okay. Any parents of MKs? Okay, good. Anybody married to an MK? Okay. Okay, yes. So the TCK is a broader category. It's anybody who has spent a significant number of their formative years in a culture other than their passport culture. So it would be business kids, diplomats kids, military kids, all of those. So it's just a broader category. And my view on MKs and on understanding them and helping them through their lives is that it takes a village to help an MK to find wholeness and stability in life. And so I love to speak to groups where there is that broad connection with MKs. I'm a single woman who never had any children, but I got to be in the lives of the MKs in my community. And I think to some degree, parents, of course, are the primary source of support and care for MKs, but those grandma, grandpa types on the field and in the churches, the single aunt and uncle types, all of those are really crucial as well to understanding MKs. And I had a great time this morning with the middle school and teen MKs in this room. What a fascinating group of people. We had some really good conversations, which I hope they will debrief with you as we move on. So actually, here is the definition of the third culture kid, but I've given it to you, so I'm going to pass right over it. What most North Americans understand of third culture kids and MKs, I'm just going to stick to MK for this talk, is what they see on the fridge, the prayer cards that they have on the fridge in the kitchen. One MK actually wrote a book called The Kid in the Picture on the Fridge, because that's the way that she identified herself to the people in the States. And this is me when I was little. And these are very well posed and well kind of sanitized pictures that we send back to our friends, our family. I say you're either a missionary or a Kardashian if every 2 years you take a glamour shot and send it to people you don't know. But sometimes the outtakes of our missionary cards look something like this. That is me falling out of the back of the tractor. The fact that my mom, who is sitting back there, took the picture instead of rescuing me is probably, I'm probably due for some counseling on that. But sometimes the reality of missionary life and MK life looks a whole lot more like this, and people don't see that on their fridges because we're not quite so anxious to show that to the rest of the world. So I'm going to talk a lot about what MKs benefit from, what the treasures of being an MK are, and I might even spend more time on what the challenges can be, because we're really good at talking about the good stuff, but sometimes we're not comfortable with, or we feel disloyal to the missionary call if we talk about the hard stuff as well. And not all MKs suffer in the course of being an MK. They all have challenges. But for those who do, I think we owe it to them, all of us who have an influence in their lives, to know more about what those pitfalls possibly could be. So the foundation of this talk is this: we cannot protect and equip our MKs until we understand their lives from their perspective. And it is a very different perspective than that of, say, an adult who has spent the majority of his or her life in one culture and then moves to another culture. There's just a different developmental piece to being an MK that is hard to understand if it hasn't been pointed out to us. I'm going to probably mark a break at about an hour into this, so you can stretch your legs, because 2 hours is a long time for a session. So just so you know, that's coming up. Most MKs, a vast majority of the MKs I know, love being MKs and would not give it up for the world. Even those who have actually been through some really hard things in their growing up years, and I would put myself in that category, I still would not give it up for the world. So please do not hear me saying today, and especially tomorrow when I'm going to go into MKs and trauma, MKs and grief, and the effect of grief on their faith, and then mental health issues among MKs, don't hear me saying that you have ruined the MKs by inviting them into this life that they're living, you have given them so much. And for the rest of their lives, 99% of them will say, I love being an MK. We just want to be able to prevent or mitigate some of those other aspects that also come along with everything they love. Everything I'm going to be talking about today is I've written about before. This is my website. There's a tab that's just MK articles on there. Not on this list are some recent articles like Deconstruction in the Life of MKs. Deconstruction has gotten a lot of attention lately. I'm here to tell you it's not necessarily a bad thing. MKs and mental health, MKs and trauma, a lot of the new research on trauma that's just come out is in those articles. If you're not the reading type, there's also a podcast on which I read the article, so it's just the audio version of the articles, and you can reach that at Pondering Purple. It's on every podcast platform out there. So just so you know that you can go back and do more research on your own on some of the topics we're going to be touching on today. But first, a question for all of you who know MKs, raise MKs, love MKs, live in conjunction with MKs. What are some of the words that you would say are MK traits that you have seen in them? Say again. Social. Mm-hmm. What other traits? Yes, when we choose to be. Yes. Resilient. Yeah. And I'm, by the way, I'm totally fine with baby noises in the session, so just don't worry about it. Somebody back here. Yes. Yes, we're going to look at that today. Yeah. Some conform and some do not, and some like to kind of straddle that line. Yeah. Any others? Okay. Which is? Conforming? Yes. Yes. And both of those are normal. So they just chose different avenues. Yeah. Would you say they're generally, at least they project as more mature than their peers in a lot of ways? They can converse as adults, with adults, not as children, with adults. Yeah, they're world savvy, they're mature. When I talk to people who know MKs and are not MKs, the word that comes up a lot is weird. They're just different. And we can't quite put our finger on what's confusing about them. So I want to explain to you why it is that, this is just a few more of the topics, why it is that MKs are hard to figure out for people who are not MKs. So this is the example that I use when I speak at MK schools overseas to try and explain to them why their parents and they are shaped differently if their parents are not MKs. So this, I give a little boy in the classroom a jar and I pour red beads into the jar and I say, well, this is planet red. This is where mom and dad were raised. This is this part of their identity. And then into the same jar, I'm going to pour some blue beads and have this child shake up the jar. And when he's done shaking it up, of course, we have a mix of red and blue beads. This is the way adults who have grown up and been stable in one culture and add another culture to their identity, this is the way they process it. They get mixed up, but they can still pick out what belongs in what place. There's some clarity there, some distinction there. Then I give the same child in the classroom two balls of Play-Doh and tell him to mix those up for a while. And when he's done doing that, of course, we have purple. This is the way MKs in their formative years, when they are absorbing everything around them and it's becoming a part of them, this is the way they process being multicultural. It is confusing. It is beautiful. It's a beautiful, unique shade of purple for each one of them. And they're going to need help kind of picking through that color and through the experiences and the languages and everything that has contributed to who they are. They need help figuring out what belongs where. It isn't as clear in the mind of an MK. So they are full of strengths. These are just some of their strengths. They're catalysts, they're communicators, they're global nomads, tolerant, insightful, mature, adaptable, bold, curious, inclusive, observant, and adventurous. This is just a few of the things that they gain from growing up in the world of ministry in a cross-cultural setting or in a monocultural setting. For every positive trait, I found that there's usually kind of a challenging trait that might go along with it, the flip side of that trait. And we're going to begin today by looking at a couple of those flip sides. But first I want to introduce you to some of the MKs I love, talking about their flip sides, what they love and what has been hard, because I think it's important to hear from their own mouths how some of these MKs are processing. So this group came to Wheaton, where I now live, a few years ago, and we spent the weekend debriefing their experience and putting it down on video. I guess I should fill you in. on me before we go any further. I was born and raised in France. My mom and my dad, who has passed away, were missionaries in France for 37 years in the area of music. And just music, was that pretty much it? And teaching, yeah. I got to grow up in a castle. They taught at the European Bible Institute just north of Paris, and it is a castle. So little impressionable, romantic me got to run the halls of the castle every day. Went through French schools. I'll tell you a bit more about that. Then went to Black Forest Academy, a boarding school for MKs in Germany. Graduated there, went grades 9 through 12. Returned to the States. Huge chip on my shoulder, did not do well in that transition, mostly because of me, not because of the environment I entered. Worked for a year as a screenwriter after college, after studying communications, then went back to Germany, back to Black Forest Academy, and taught there for 20 years. And I've been back in the States now for 12 years. Those of you doing mental math, that makes me 54. There's usually somebody going, okay, graduated college, 54 years old, and happy to be alive. So here is a short video of those MKs telling you in their own words about their flip sides.
One of the coolest things about being a missionary kid is just the different kind of people I've been able to meet, the different cultures.
It's being raised with a range of worldviews and experiences that come with the different places you live.
Meeting a lot of cool people.
Like the different memories and stories that I have.
It's full of adventure and fun.
So being able to see how my parents have served people in third world countries.
Developing a love for travel and meeting new people.
Looking back at my life, seeing how God protected me and my family.
I feel like relationships are very intimate in that community and very deep, and that's definitely been a blessing.
One of the challenges is always being asked the same questions wherever I go.
One of the hardest things is constantly moving around. You're never really around family.
Always losing people and always saying goodbye.
I don't know how to say it. Being confronted with expectations that people have of you.
It's taking two cultures that you have grown up with and mixing them into one.
I wish I could actually go home to Uzbekistan, Germany, either of those places, just and see old friends, but I don't get to.
Leaving those relationships that you've made, specifically in those friendships.
You don't just have one solid foundation as you grow up, which makes you a little less stable in who you are, I think.
Another challenge is not being able to explain myself clearly.
I have to know that whatever I'm doing, the church is watching, as well as my parents are watching, and everyone who supports us is watching. And so my actions don't only affect me.
You're expected to kind of be perfect. Not always, like that's just kind of the mindset they put on you.
And also just the kind of transitory nature of it. You never quite feel stable, I think, no matter where you are.
I wish I had had some more stability.
I've treasured each place I've been, I've treasured all the people I've known. I wouldn't give it up for anything.
Even though I think there's a lot of little issues that come along with being an MK, a lot of stuff that I'm still working through and still understanding about myself, I guess I love it.
There's been downsides and there's been good sides. I really enjoy the memories I got and just like living on the jungle river, you know, how many people could say that? Well, seeing the different countries I did, going through those life challenges that have made me stronger, better, you know.
My world is so much more enriched because of it. I've seen something greater in life than I think I would have if I'd been just a normal American teenager.
So you hear that, right? You hear them saying how much they've loved it and acknowledging that there's some stuff that's a little bit challenging too. So I think we owe it to them as adults of influence in their lives, whatever role we have, to acknowledge the same two things, that it's wonderful and that there's stuff that comes along with it. So let's look at some of those flip sides that I was just mentioning. We'll start with the positive and then the kind of corresponding challenge that can arise. The first is that they have a global mindset, which is such a unique strength in today's world, in the global village that we live in. They see everything through a global lens. They will hear reporting on TV or on the news and contradict what that reporter is saying because they know better. They've been there, they've experienced it. The flip side of that is confused loyalties. World Cup soccer, the Olympics, who do I cheer for? Who do I belong to? Where do I hang my heart when it comes to these cultures? Another of the flip sides is a 3D understanding of the world. The sights, the sounds, the customs, the pace of the language, the festivals, the traditions. They don't just see that place on TV, they're immediately brought back to the full embodied experience of what that culture was. The flip side of that is that for some of them, it's a painful awareness of reality. They've experienced famine, they've seen it all around them and felt helpless to do anything for the people starving around them. For some of them, of course, recently, they've had to flee their homeland of Ukraine or flee Russia for the same reasons. There's just so much that comes from being embedded heart and soul in a place when things like this come up. I was at a debrief a few years ago, and we did show and tell, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. But everybody was supposed to bring something that was significant from their life overseas, and this young lady, Becca, left the room and came back in fully dressed in a hazmat suit, which to her was just an expression of life as usual in the country she had come from. But her father was treating Ebola patients, and the family had been separated for a couple of months. They would only see each other when they were all fully decked out in their hazmat suits. They had just fled the country in the middle of the night on illegal flights and somehow made it back to the States, leaving Dad behind. And her show and tell was a hazmat suit and very lighthearted, but we discovered as we spoke with her that there was more to it, to that 3D understanding of what is going on in the world. They're also adaptable. And I mentioned this earlier, when we choose to be, we can be adaptable. We can also refuse to adapt. And the flip side of that is a lack of full belonging anywhere. Even this morning when I was sitting here with the teenagers, we ran around the room and asked them to tell us where their homes are, homes, plural. And you could tell that it was even hard for some of them to call some places home because it felt disloyal to the other home that they hold more dearly to their hearts. Lack of belonging is something we're going to go into a little bit more today. They're hypermobile. And honestly, I would say that maybe 80% of them hit this generalization. 20% of them, we say MKs either have overdeveloped wings or overdeveloped roots. And I would say 80% are the wings. They need to flit a lot. I'm on the root side of things. I need to dig down and not go anywhere. But a majority of them are hypermobile. They love travel. They love languages. They're just really good at all of that. And the flip side of that is restlessness. So those who are built that way, those who are built for wanting change often because they've experienced change often, that's their normal, are going to have some challenges once they settle into some place that feels more permanent to them or into a relationship that feels more permanent to them. This is something they're going to have to process. We're so used to having friends for 1 or 2 years at a time and then they leave and we get another friend, that having the same spouse or friend for 20 years, we're not quite sure what to do past those first phases of getting to know each other, acknowledging that we love each other, entering into intense relationship as fast as we can, and then what? So this can be the flip side of that. They are highly savvy in some areas. Can you tell me what some of those areas might be where MKs are more savvy than their monocultural peers might be? What are some of the things they do really well? Yeah, without even blinking an eye. I have to travel alone from here to literally Timbuktu? Sure. Show me the airport. Yeah, what else? Yes. Oh, what a gift that is. Situational awareness. Reading the room is something they do really well. Yeah. Languages, yep. And I think when they learn a language early in life and their brain starts to function on those two tracks, then they can add languages more easily later in life as well. Mm-hmm. Any other strengths or areas of savviness? Yes, yes. In some contexts, we call it code switching here, where you can switch the coded language that you use, and it's used in the States usually for racial coded language, but MKs are really good at the coding of culture and switching those codes from one place to another. So yes, they're very inept in some areas. They're totally inept in other areas. That's the flip side, sadly. What are some of those areas that they really need some extra coaching, especially as they enter into adulthood, that other monocultural peers, and I don't use monocultural as a diminishing thing, just a difference from multicultural. What are some of the things that maybe you have experienced, your MKs, or you as an MK, having a little challenge with in the area of savviness? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And things that are so common here, driving at age 16, I didn't drive until I was 21, and then because my dad bribed me, he would buy me a new car if I got my driver's license by 21, so I got it the day before. And then I didn't want to drive because it freaked me out. Driving, understanding banking systems and automatic tellers, knowing how to order at Subway. When I talk with MKs who are just coming back to the States from overseas, I tell them always look up the restaurant where you're going to lunch in advance so that when you get there, you know how to order. Starbucks. You have 16 people behind you and you don't know how to order your drink just the way you want it. Just things like that, the really basic practical things that they have such an enhanced life in so many ways, and these little practical things they struggle with. Independent. We are fiercely independent, which again is a strength, and not all are, but it's a general trait. When I was in college, I got stranded in San Francisco trying to get to Redding during a blizzard. I had been in the blizzard all the way from Boston across to San Francisco, 12 hours, I think, in Chicago. Got here, middle of the night, and some pilot said, hey, if I rent a van, does anybody want to get in the van with me and drive from San Francisco to Redding? And I'm 18, 19, and I said, sure. So it was me and this pilot and a Chinese woman who spoke not a word of English, the poor thing, because we were singing 99 bottles of beer on the wall. And there was the pilot of the blimp in Sao Paulo, Brazil. The Goodyear blimp in Sao Paulo, Brazil was in and a cowboy. And I was 18 or 19, and that was perfectly normal to me, that adventuresome spirit of independence. The flip side of that is selective attachment, and we're going to look at that a little bit more this afternoon. Number seven, there's just two more, skilled observer. And somebody has already mentioned this, and the reason I have it in this list is that it's often misunderstood. An MK will walk into a room like one of these rooms here, and they might stand in the back or just to the side of the door and observe for a long time. They're trying to get the lay of the land, figure out how things are done here, because one of our greatest concerns is being culturally inappropriate. A cultural faux pas is a big kind of a stain on us because we so highly value being culturally correct. So we're skilled observers. We're gonna observe a long time, and it can look like indecision, but a lot of the times it isn't that. It's actually using our higher skills and figuring out how things are working so we can more seamlessly enter into this situation. And finally, we contextualize story by place. And this is something you can help your MKs with, because if I say that the year we went to Egypt on spring break, when my class went to Rome for our senior trip, right before we moved to England, when we use those descriptors to tell our life stories to people who are not multicultural, they immediately shut down because there's nothing they can relate to in those locations. If we can teach our MKs instead to use time, the year I graduated from high school, right before I turned 10, to use time that are more universal time increments rather than locations, MKs will do better, especially coming back to their passport culture. They'll feel like it's disloyal to their homes, but if we can explain to them that it is actually an entry point that'll be less, that'll put up less walls between them and their new friends, and then eventually they can tell them about their other homes, their Egypt and England and whatever, that'll help them to make their integration into this culture a little bit better. So MKs from the outside looking in can be very confusing to people who don't understand the complexity of what shapes them and what has shaped them. So they might be able to have a philosophical conversation in three languages. They might not know how many cents are in a dime. It took me a while in college to figure that out, and why the nickel is bigger than the dime when there are fewer cents in it still doesn't make sense to me. They don't know how to drive by the age of 20. They might have no clue what a running back is in football. They consider laws merely a suggestion, which can be dangerous in this country. In other countries, the laws, you can, you know, pay off the police officer, but don't try that here. And they might, as one of my friends did, try on clothes in the middle of the store, even though they're a changing room, because it's so much more efficient just to do it right here. So these are the ways that they're so far ahead of their peers and so much less equipped in some ways than the rest of their peers. So that was the confusion. Now comes the complexity, the cultural complexity of MKs. And we're going to look at these three cultures, the passport culture, the adoptive culture, and I'm going to identify the missionary culture as one that stands on its own as well and has its own amount of influence in the way the MKs perceive their life and God and their own identity, who they are. It's very difficult for MKs to make sense of their pieces that constitute who they are, and I found that they take some different approaches to it, and these are just illustrations. Some of them kind of piece them together in this way. Some of them are a little bit more, find it harder to piece their pieces together, like this one. Some of them have one on the inside, one on the outside. Some have the code-shifting ability of switching whatever costume you're wearing at any time. I think that a healthy MK is going to look more like this. Everything swirled in there, and the ability to pick out what belongs where at the same time. So the adoptive culture is the first one we're going to look at. Mine was France. This is me in French schools. Can you tell how happy I was? It reminds me vaguely of this. It's the same amount of joy. And what we need to know about MKs who are in their formative years and absorbing life around them is that they're not going to question what they're viewing. They're going to assume that that is universal and then going to absorb it as okay. Let me give you an example of what happened with me in French schools. I had a horrible experience in French schools. I told some of the kids about it this morning. The French believe that fear and pain are really good motivators to study more and do better in classes. So I had teachers who would call me stupid, tell me that I would never amount to anything, tell me my parents were stupid, therefore I was stupid, would pinch a nerve in my shoulder until my arm would go numb. They would pull my ear until my earlobe would bleed. They literally had a dunce cap, a hat with donkey ears sticking out of it, and they would stand me at the front of the room with the dunce cap on and instruct my friends to mock me to make me a better student. I never told my parents about it because everybody was treated the same way and I assumed that it was a universal truth that adults of influence were going to treat children that way for our good. So what are the things that the MKs you know might be absorbing from their cultures and not questioning because they're seen as universal, therefore okay? Other aspects of the French culture, when our former, many times back, President Mitterrand died, when I was a child, we watched his funeral on state TV, and in Notre Dame Cathedral, bless her heart, she's gone, and on one side there was his wife and daughter on national TV, and on the other side in the front row was his mistress and illegitimate daughter on national TV. And it was absolutely normal because there's an assumption that men of influence with a certain amount of power and money were, of course, they would have a secondary family. So again, for the little MK me watching this on TV, it normalizes things that my family certainly wouldn't have normalized, but we absorb without questioning things that come from our adoptive culture. We also see it as a way of honoring the culture. We would feel like it would be dishonoring for us to question the way they do things. So this is where family influence and family culture can become a really helpful thing. The differences in MKs are not just visible, and more with the internet, they're not as obvious. As obviously not from here as they used to be. When I was at Wheaton back in the 80s, I had a bedroom on the quad, which is where a lot of people crossed between classes, and you could tell the MKs because in a blizzard they were in Birkenstocks, and we just knew those are the MKs. Today we fit in more visibly, more easily, but all of their differences are on these levels that are not always obvious. Behavioral. MKs who point with their lips rather than their finger if they come from certain countries, who hold hands with people of the same gender as them because that's just the way we do things overseas. They leave food on a plate because it's the right thing to do. They're not trying to disrespect their hostess. Philosophical, what is truly valuable? What is the meaning of life? They're going to have different answers to that depending on the cultures that shaped them. Moral values, are there absolutes? What about alcohol if you're an MK from France? These are going to shape them as well. Theological, how they view God. I love, there's an African study Bible that's out right now that was published by a publisher near where I live, where the Bible is analyzed through the eyes of African people and how they view those texts differently than we do and draw different truths from the same text that we're looking at. Verbal, of course, is mastery of language on one side, but also how do we use words to express emotions? Are we allowed to express emotions with our words? Relational, gender roles is going to be different culture to culture, of course. Age hierarchy, we know cultures where the oldest is always seen as superior. social, what is acceptable behavior in certain settings is different from culture to culture. And finally, emotional, what emotions am I allowed to show? I work a lot with MKs from honor shame cultures, and this is kind of where the rubber meets the road for a lot of them, where they keep internalizing emotions because they're told that showing emotions is shameful. So what do they do, though, with this accumulation of emotions in them? Because so many of their differences are internal, we call them hidden immigrants. They look the part, they talk the part, but inside they're different. And our patron saint of hidden immigrants is this man right here. There's a reason MKs love this movie. They identify with this man. So let's look at the missionary culture. What are some traits that are specific to the missionary culture that you can tell me about? Missionaries are, generally speaking, any ideas? Goodness, I'm going to have to help you, aren't I? Here are some. Frugality. This is where my mom is usually not in the room, and I tell you about how she can make 6 meals out of 1 chicken and how she saved her pretzel salt for years, the salt that falls off the pretzels into the bottom of the bag, because salt is so expensive, right, Mom? You have to save your pretzel salt. I actually got her a handmade container with, does it say pretzel salt on it? Oh, it says Ziploc bags, because you reuse your Ziploc bags 150 times if you must. So she could put all her change in this thing and then at the end of the year buy Ziploc bags with it. That was my slightly passive-aggressive way of saying use your Ziploc bags. Frugality, conservative values, generally more conservative than both their passport cultures and their adoptive cultures. Service to others. You heard that in that video. One of the guys said, I just love that we're devoted to helping others. And then this last one is really influential, the urgent need to live up to the expectations of others. This is huge. And one of the girls in the video said, I feel like everybody is watching me. My fellow MKs are watching me. The people that were there to serve are watching me. My parents are watching me. The churches that sent us are watching me. Everybody is watching me. And the more I speak on this topic, that the mission culture is often seen as the culture of should, the more I realize that this is in every age group of MKs I work with. I was in the state of Georgia last winter, and I did a session on this. So these were all MKs. Actually, the age range was 18 to 65. Try speaking to that age group. And within 5 minutes, we had compiled all of these shoulds that you see on this board. I should be happy. I should... don't bring shame to my parents. I should be interesting. I should speak multiple languages. I should be able to bring people to Christ. I should, all of these shoulds. With again, the MKs aren't going to say, do I really need to be able to do all of this? They just assume that they need to do all of this. And this is something that needs to be addressed in families, because the only people who can relieve them of those shoulds is parents who talk to them about who Jesus is and what he expects of them. And a lot of times those shoulds are going to be a lot different than these. Tomorrow we're going to look at MKs and mental illness, and one of the things we look at is why it isn't reported much by the MKs themselves. It's because of the shoulds. I should not have depression or anxiety because I'm an MK. God is in me. So how dare I burden my parents with a diagnosis of my mental illness? So the shoulds are really important, and Rebecca really expresses it very well. She's a former student of mine. She says, I guess that's the crux of being an MK. We're completely alone, and so often subconsciously, we make a decision. We choose not to trust. Better to keep to yourself. The strong missionary child is what they want, so that's what they'll get. It's all that's been grilled into our minds. Be strong. Be exceptional. Don't give in and overcome. Can you feel the pressure of that? And again, these are on young people, young purple souls who don't have a lot of clarity culturally, and then we burden them with these unspoken shoulds. Sometimes they are spoken. Sometimes we misspeak our expectations of them. Can you think of a time in the ministry's life cycle when MKs might feel this most keenly? A time in the MK or the ministry life. Furlough. Furlough is huge for reinforcing negative shoulds in the mind of MKs. They put them on themselves. I thought that it was my job to ensure that churches liked us enough to keep supporting us or to start supporting us. I called myself, in my very cynical French girl way, I called myself the closer. I sang the song at the end of the service, and if the ladies didn't cry, I had failed at my job because it was my job to make sure that we were financially afloat. Ridiculous at age 13 or 14. But these are some of the shoulds that I experienced. And here's a very tongue-in-cheek video I want to show you, but sometimes this is what furlough looks like to MKs and even member care visits on the field.
Listen, Ethel, I think this... Splendidly. Speed it up,
Furlough! Do you recognize yourselves a little bit in that? What can we do? What can we do as a missionary community about the shoulds that weigh like a mountain on top of RMKs? I would love some suggestions from you on that. What can we do to alleviate some of it? Yes. Take breaks. Yes. Without guilt, and telling them we do not feel guilty about this. Yes. Yeah. You were saying? Grace. Yeah. 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 And it needs to be spoken to them in clear words. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. 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 I think that's why we don't call it furlough anymore, right? We call it home ministry assignment. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, lesson learned. Yes. Oh. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I guarantee you there's probably something in him that puts that, now has that expectation on himself, that he should have had an answer for that, right? Yeah. Yes. Yes. Oh. Mm-hmm. 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 Listening to the kids is so important. Establishing a family culture where that kind of honest talk is possible kind of comes before even that step. Yeah. Yeah. And I think hearing parents expressing the same thing from your perspective gives them permission to express it from their perspective. Anything else on that? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, letting them develop their own passions and interests without expecting of them that they automatically become missionaries in their future as well. Yeah, all really good. If you look at my website, one of the articles on that list is called The Six Permissions Most MKs Need, and that might be a good starting point to understanding how to alleviate some of the pressure of the shoulds that so many of them live under. So we're going to move on to, unless there's something else to be said. Anything else? Okay, moving on to the passport culture. These are, this is the home, they hate to call it that, some of them, the home culture, which often does not feel like home to them. This, the transition back from the field to the home culture of all the adult MKs I've spoken with, without exception, they have said that was the hardest transition of their life. Even if they moved in their youth, you know, from totally different countries like Pakistan to Honduras, this move back to home is in a lot of cases, in most all cases, the hardest transition they make. When I lived in Germany still, we would graduate our seniors at the end of every year. And one of the reasons I had to move back to the States is that when they would call me with their SOS calls, it was the middle of the night over there. But I got a call at 3 a.m. from Aaron, who had gone to Sarah Lawrence in New York. Never lived in a city before. Dropped off, and there's a lot to be said about this, dropped off by her parents, and they left immediately. So she's in a big city at a huge university, no idea what to do, and she's sobbing on the phone. She's sitting on a dumpster on a rainy day in an alley of New York calling me in Germany, and I said, and I'm trying to calm her down and saying, Aaron, it's okay. How long have you been there? And she said, 5 hours. So that transition is hard, and it's long. She thought that it would take 1 or 2 days for her to kind of get her footing and be at home in her home culture. And for so many of them, that is just not going to be the case, at least for a while. You're an MK. Did you come back from the field at some point?
I still live out
there. You still live out there?
I am 22.
Okay.
Not 22.
Yes, yes.
A lot of what we've been talking about.
Yeah. Yes.
And I
okay.
Add
yep. Still.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Does this feel like home to you?
No.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Right. Right. And yet there's an expectation that if you hold the passport, somehow that makes it real, right? And for a lot of MKs, it isn't going to be that. This is another Rebecca. Rebecca has now been in the States, oh my goodness, nearly 20 years, and she married an American, and they have children. And she says this, I think the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life was return to the States. I left behind a place and people who understood me. I left my culture behind. I left my heart behind. I still feel out of place here, even after 18 years of living here. So we need to accept that this is going to be a reality in the life of MKs and to help them to live in the discomfort of not fully belonging somewhere. And we're going to look at that a little bit later today. But why is it that so many MKs struggle with their attitude towards their passport culture? Have you experienced that to be true, that there's kind of a negative attitude towards their passport culture? In the boarding school where I worked, it was kind of the national sport to sit around and bash your home country with ridiculous exaggerations about the home country. And I don't think I'm going to go in detail into that right now. I'll just quickly go over some of the reasons that they have a bad attitude about their home culture. Number one, if they're American, it's going to be the coverage, the news coverage they get in their foreign cultures. Americans are not usually shown in a very positive light. If they talk about us, it's when the worst of the worst happens in the U.S., so that's part of it. Rebellion in that they don't want to be here sometimes. This is the last place they want to go. I did not want to return to the States, but it's where I logically would go for college. So just this dissatisfaction with being here. Self-protection. This one is a little bit more convoluted. It's the MK who, again, I mentioned earlier that we want to be able to fit in. That's a really high priority for us. So just in case we can't manage it here, we're going to decide we don't want to fit in the first place. So we're protecting ourselves by not wanting to belong, because then if we try and fail, that feels worse than just living in unbelonging. And then fear of permanence. We're so scared that if we put down little baby roots in this soil, we're never going to be able to pull them up again. And again, more education around that would be helpful. Of course you can still pull up your roots. Of course you can belong in multiple places. But for some of them, that's going to be the point of contention. If I belong for a year, I am never going to get back to my Technicolor world. Notice this picture is all beige. They do not want to live in beige. They want to live in Technicolor for the rest of their lives. And finally, there's arrogance, and I really do encourage you to call this out when you see it in the children. They don't realize that it's arrogance. They think it's just stating the fact that this is better, and that's worse. This is what kept me from connecting to anybody during my college years was arrogance. No American is going to understand me. Nobody knows what's the name of the river that runs through Paris. What do they have to offer me when I've seen the world and they've seen their county? That arrogance is such a wall that inhibits any kind of connection with anybody, including to some degree with their inner selves, because they're holding themselves up to such an arrogant level that they don't even acknowledge the needs and the yearning that they might have inside of themselves. So please call out the arrogance when you see it in them and walk through it with them. To me, and I tell this to MKs, condemning an American for not knowing what river runs through Paris, it's the Seine, FYI, for not knowing what river runs through Paris is the same as telling a blind man, how dare you not know what red is? We have been blessed enough to grow up in red, and other people have not had that opportunity, so we should feel thankful, not arrogant, about what we've gotten to experience. I'm going to skip through this slide right here.
Culture.
What people do, how people eat and what they eat.
How people dress or how people live.
I get my culture from New Zealand, Holland, Ireland, Canada, and United States. Bon. No. I think that's all. You get other ways to do it, like how to eat and how you move and how you see and how you breathe and how you hear. It's just how a TCK is.
If I had to say where I was from, I would say the airport.
Moi,
I'm a TCK.
I love that he says that there's a cultural way that we breathe. We're different the way we talk, the way we breathe is different as well. Such truth out of the mouths of babes. So this is the kind of purpleness we're talking about. You heard it in what they said. It's all woven together. It's a beautiful shade of purple. And they need adults who have more clarity, the beads that we talked about earlier, to help them to navigate and understand the pieces of themselves. This great philosopher once said, "I feel thin, sort of stretched, like butter scraped over too much bread," in Lord of the Rings. And so many MKs, I think, feel a little bit like that, butter spread over too much bread. How do we coalesce that back into something that feels like wholeness? So what can adults of influence do to help these purple MKs to sort through all of that complexity and start to see things more clearly? I would love some suggestions from you. What can we do to help them with everything we've just covered, the home culture, the adopted culture, passport culture, adopted culture, and missionary culture? What can we as adults of influence do to help them find some clarity? And then after that, we're going to break for 5 minutes. Whichever, any situation. Yeah. Yes. And that also reduces their social world to a smaller group, the soccer team, the whatever, the art club, which is less overwhelming to them as far as entering new circles. Yeah. What else can we do for the MKs in our care? Yeah. How? That's a good point. Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But one of them definitely was willing and desiring that. So we got them that counseling, which was tremendous.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And two of them, well, I guess three, we don't work it, so the others have had counseling, but to this day, they're But to this day, we encourage this and do with them.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Very true. We're going to talk a lot more about that tomorrow. Yeah, that's really important. Were you going to say something? Yes. 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 Yeah. Yeah. Letting them know it's okay to grieve, it's okay to struggle, and be open as adults in the family about what you're going through as well. Again, tomorrow, please come tomorrow and share of your wisdom. Yes, so much to be said for that, for showing them that. And I told them this morning, if you had kids in the teen group, I told them that it is not weakness to be sad. It is not weakness to not want to do what your family has to do next, whatever move it is. That's not weakness. We're built for predictability and belonging, and of course it's going to feel bad, and God knows that, and he's not ashamed of you if you're sad or angry or whatever over something that's been imposed by circumstances or by family changes or whatever, and they need that to be reaffirmed by their parents, who are the sources of wisdom that they most respect, hopefully, in their lives. So on the board are some suggestions that I didn't go through with you of helping, ways to help MKs to kind of muddle through their cultural complexity. So I'll just put them up there for you. We're just going to, the third C is conflicted in the three C's. Five C's that identify MKs, and tomorrow is going to be, as I said earlier, a lot on this topic, so I'm not going to cover much of it today because I don't want to duplicate today and tomorrow, but it's more, their conflicted feelings are more than just who do I cheer for during a World Cup competition or the Olympics. It goes much deeper than that. There's a French expression that says, je sais pas sur quel pied danser, I don't know what foot to dance on. And MKs have one foot on planet happy and one foot on planet complicated or hard, and they just don't know how to manage that split that they're doing. They love so much about being MKs. They love so much about the blessings afforded them by their parents' decision to become missionaries, and they know that they have also lost so much and been thrown into complicated waters so much because of it as well. I do reentry retreats in Canada with MKs every summer, a couple week-long retreats for MKs who are just coming back to this continent for the first time, and we do a whole day on grief with them because it is so, like, it's woven into them in so many ways, and they don't even realize it sometimes. So we give them a day to really begin to process what grief looks like. Because the average TCK, so that's that broader group, goes through eight major moves by the age of 18. Eight major moves by the age of 18. And that is a lot for a young spirit to be able to muddle through and understand. So on that day with the MKs at this place called Reboot, I have them go out and start a journal of everything that they have lost in just this last move. Not just, well, my school and my house, but those smaller things, those detail things, those subcategories of the big things that they've lost. And they come back with pages of, you know, the smell of the bakery early in the morning, or the sound of the prayers being chanted in the mosque. These things that they hadn't identified yet as a loss, but that they now identify as such. And I want to, just as kind of an introduction to what we're going to do tomorrow, if any of you want to come back, one of the MKs who was there 1 year, his name is Caleb, and he's a spoken word artist. And I told the story of this little boy that I met in Nepal. He was in third grade. His name was Ryan. He was British. I can't do a British accent, but imagine this in that accent. And we were talking about good ways to say hello and good ways to say goodbye. And Ryan said, when I meet somebody new, remember he's what, 8 years old? When I meet somebody new, I put out my hand and I shake their hand and I say, hi, my name is Ryan and I'm going to be gone soon. That is the way he enters into relationships, because of that expectation. So Caleb came up to me. me the next day and he said, I've got a spoken word for you, inspired by Ryan. He changed the name in it. But this is, I'm going to give you just the beginning, the first half of it, so you can understand better from his mind what those losses feel like. And then I think I'll have time at the end today to play you the second half of that, which is much more redemptive than this first half. So here's Caleb.
Hi. My name is John, and I'm going to be gone soon. I've played the tune of goodbye so many times, my introductions begin with an end. I've had friends hold on so tight, they just end up bruising my heart, so I'll make sure goodbye takes part in my hello. I'll make sure I let them know my name and my future before I rupture my heart over another friend I cannot keep. So my seeping heart refuses to let people in, because an exit wound is too much to bear, and if someone was to say I don't care, they'd be wrong. My heart longs for friendships and love, but it's continually undone by the plane ride that divides me from commitment. So my name is John, and I'm gonna be gone soon, because my high was shaped by the plane rides, and hello was molded by the yellow pages I constantly left behind. I have friends I've never met, because seeing meant being there, and there was never where I was. So my closest friends were phantoms that mirrored friendship without the requirement of presence.
So that's the first half of it. And you can feel, right? You can feel this 18, 19-year-old boy is just realizing what has been gurgling around his soul for months. So again, we're going to go through that tomorrow in much more detail. I have yet to meet an MK who hasn't loved being an MK, and I have yet to meet an MK who doesn't have things that he wish or she wishes were different that have been painful in some way. This is really the basis of what I do on the topic of grief. Grief ignored or silenced becomes a private weakness, and grief expressed and processed becomes a shareable strength. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who developed the 5 stages of grief, also says grief must be witnessed in order to be healed. And that's what I shared with the MKs this morning, with the teens. Grief must be spoken and witnessed in order to be healed, because those MKs who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s that I'm meeting today, most of them have had grief embedded in them, and they have never spoken of it. And it just grows under those circumstances. So be the witnesses that take on the words of grief of the children you know who have grown up in these situations that can foster that kind of pain and loss, so that it can be heard and so that it can be processed. Now, when I put this quote up with young adult MKs, I need to immediately say about that second half, this does not need to happen overnight, because they immediately go, okay, I'm going to process it, and tomorrow I'm going to use it for somebody else. It can take months and years for them to get to the point where it's healed enough that they can speak from their scars and not from their gaping wounds. And there's a big difference in those two scenarios. I think I'm going to skip ahead. Yes, I am. So pardon me while I skip. Oh. I want to remind you of the great strengths of MKs, because we've gone a little dark, so these are the great strengths of MKs. They will thank you for the rest of your life, their lives and yours, that you gave them the great richness and blessing and gift of growing up cross-culturally in the world of ministry. There is nothing that can replace what you have given them in that sense. And we're just looking at the dark stuff to try and mitigate as much of it as we can. And again, most MKs love being MKs. So let's talk about MKs and relationships. And this is where they lit up this morning. There was a lot of recognition in this topic with the young people in the group. My favorite definition of relationship, as I think it defines MK relationships specifically, is this: we are all weird and life is weird, and when we find someone whose weirdness is compatible with ours, we call it love. And in a conference like this, that's what they're seeing in each other. They meet each other, they go, you are my kind of weird, and there's this immediate recognition in the other that I absolutely love. I'm keeping an eye on the time, because I want to tell you my favorite MK relationship story, and by golly, I'm going to. I think I have the time. I told the kids this morning too. So taught at BFA, Black Forest Academy. This is Mark. Mark now lives in Wheaton, and I have mild PTSD every time he walks into a coffee shop that I'm sitting at. But Mark was in high school, and he decided to ask a girl to the banquet. If you know boarding schools, asking a girl to the banquet, they pull out all the stops and do more than the average guy would be to propose to a woman and ask her to marry him. It is just a huge thing. So he asked me, could I have the five seniors from the dorm where I helped out, senior girls, come over for a movie, and he was going to crawl in my bedroom window with flowers and ask her to the banquet. And I thought, well, how sweet. A little romance in my single girl life. Let's make it happen. So I ask all five girls over. We're watching, I think, When Harry Met Sally or one of those movies. And I hear rattling in my bedroom window. And I thought, flowers do not rattle. So something has happened between the initiation of this plan and what's happening right now. What I discovered later is that you're looking at me like, you know what's coming. What I discovered later is that while Mark lived in a dorm with 40 boys, so things snowball when there's too much testosterone in the room, and that's what happened to this plan. And he recruited two friends to help him with his proposal to this girl, and they went around the dorm, and this was kind of before 9/11, so there were still all kinds of machetes and swords and fake guns and stuff in the dorm, so they had collected all of, to ask a girl to the banquet, they had collected all the weapons they could find and found trench coats and big belts and tucked all the weapons into the belts around the trench coats, found ski masks, which they put on their heads, hopped on their bikes, and rode in small-town Germany to my village of 400 farmers, rode up to my apartment, pulled down their ski mask. Now, you need to understand, Germans love nothing more than sitting on their balconies with their coffee watching the American houses in the neighborhood. So there were eyes on my apartment when these terrorists drove up and pulled down their ski masks and came around my house to the basement apartment. So we're sitting down here with these girls having this lovely movie time, and the rattling occurs, and the next thing I know, five guys dressed in full, like, gear come into my home screaming at the top of their lungs in their foreign language, which happens to be Arabic. So they're screaming in Arabic. They're dressed like horrible people. The windows are open because it's a beautiful spring day, and the neighbors are hearing all of this. And then Mark, who is an overachiever only in the worst possible ways, had brought a backpack full of glass jars, and they're smashing them on the tile floor of the kitchen for sound effects. So we now have glass breaking. Girls who knew they were coming are shrieking. They knew these were their friends, shrieking, the glass breaking, the Arabic screaming, and all of the accoutrements of these guys who came to my home. So I finally tell them to knock it off. We're sitting on the floor eating the cake I graciously single missionary made for them, and I had this wall of windows on one side of my living room, and I saw the first police officer with his gun drawn walking by the windows, followed by another one, and we discovered that 13 police officers had come from all, they were so excited, nothing happens in Germany. They finally had a crisis. They had come from all the surrounding villages with their sirens blaring and then gone stealth when they entered my village of Rielingen, circled the house, and one of them was actually in my house by the time I noticed it because my front door had been open, and he goes, was passiert? What's going on here? How do you explain? Well, this boy was asking this girl to the banquet, and he looks at my kitchen floor and goes, and this, and the glass all over the floor, and I just went, Americans, what can I say? This is how we do relationships. This is how MKs do relationship. We're a little bit too earnest and intense. So we were in the paper the next day. It was titled Party Gag in Rielingen. The guys got all their, I have a picture. Those are the three boys. And then the next day, the culprit, Mark, drew a picture of me trying to talk to the cop. notice the body language. and then this is the article in the paper the next day. About a month later, I was driving, and police typically or often pull you over just to check your papers in Germany. So they asked for my papers and saw my name, and the cop goes, party gag. And I went, yes, that's me. The next day, I turned up at school with a huge bandage on my pinky finger, and I told Mark that I had cut myself picking up the glass, and that I had gotten to the hospital the night before and had stitches, and I'd passed out in my friend's car. Nothing of this had happened. I was totally making it up. And every day for the next 3 days, I got chocolates and flowers, and it was beautiful right up until Mark's parents came to my classroom and said, we'd like to pay for your hospital bills. And I said, no, really, it's okay. Look, fine. So, MKs and relationships. Let's talk about that, shall we? So they enter into relationships, as you heard Caleb say, with this expectation of loss. And when I said it to the teenagers this morning, they all groaned, like, yes. You meet somebody new, you don't know how long you're going to be around or they're going to be around. Even if it's planned that they'll be there for 4 years, they know things change overnight. So we enter into relationships with this expectation that somebody might be leaving soon. It ends up having some side effects for MKs in relationships. One of them is urgency. These are the MKs who enter too fast into relationship. Like, I have to make friends, and we got to go really fast because, I don't know, clock is ticking. And that can be dangerous in some ways because the person that they are trying to enter into relationship with might not be reciprocating the same honest depth that they are. The flip side of that actually is reluctance. And these are the MKs who decide, I am not going to make any friends because it hurts too much, and I know it's going to hurt down the road or tomorrow, we never know, so I'm just not going to do that. I'm not going to lay myself open for that kind of pain. Third is pessimism. They see all relationships as being temporary, like Ryan in Nepal. My name is Ryan, and I'm going to be gone soon. The pro of that, the advantage of that, is that they make the most of the time they have. The downside of that is that they don't know what to do, as I mentioned earlier, with long-term relationships. They struggle with that monotony, if I dare call it that. Self-blame, completely irrational. But there are some MKs who are going to say that there must be something wrong with them, and that's why they haven't had a friend for more than 2 years at a time. When it's political stuff, it's mission stuff, it's financial stuff that's causing people to come and go, but somehow they anchor it as something wrong with me. So diffusing that lie can be really important. And finally, needlessness. And honestly, this was me for a while, deciding I'm not going to need anything or anybody again, because when you need something, it hurts even more when it's taken away from you. Here's the problem with needlessness. Relationship is based on this three-legged stool of common focus and interests, mutual enjoyment, and reciprocal need. And if you take the need out of there, the need is the glue that keeps you coming back to each other. I need you. I want to be with you. And if you don't need anybody anymore, your capacity to enter into authentic, meaningful, deep relationship is altered by that. And they don't realize that their self-protection is actually self-harm, relationally speaking. So the TCK versus monocultural relationship model is this. When MKs meet each other, because of the TikTok, they dive deep really fast. The first couple of conversations, they're going to lay it out on the line, exactly who they are, what their challenges are, what they've loved in life, where they've lived, how their parents are doing, their, you know, grandparents' health issues, all of it will come out really fast because they'll gauge by that person's response, if you're one of my kind, if we can do this relationship real fast for however long we've got, or if I should just move on. And then they'll stay at that deep purple line of relationship for however long the relationship lasts. In a monocultural setting like the U.S., people will meet and very gradually, over a long period of time, they will deepen the mutual understanding of two potential friends until they do actually eventually get to meaningful relationship. The way of getting there is just going to feel completely different. Because TCKs to authenticate relationship need depth. I know that you are my friend because we talk about everything. Monoculturals need time. I know that you are my friend because we've been friends for 5 years. Those two different ways of defining friendship can be really confusing and frustrating to MKs. The people who are down on the purple line will look up at the green line and think, you guys are so what? That shallow is the word. That's the one. And the people who are used to the green line will look down at the purple line and say, you people are so what? Weird is one. Intense, emotional, yes. And what MKs need to understand is that a culture is built for the people who belong in it to be comfortable. And if we are not the target audience for that culture, we're the ones who are going to have to adapt our way of doing things in order to be more in line with the culture. So what I encourage them to do today is to take the time to go down that green line, learn what you need to learn. When I moved to Chicago, I needed to learn everything about the Bears, the Cubs, and the Bulls because that was the language of that green line in Chicagoland. And because I learned that and I was able to have those conversations about the things that mattered nothing to me but mattered a lot to them, I was able to descend that green line into something that was meaningful. Because we're so used to being able to establish whether you're my friend or not within the first 4 or 5 conversations, we bail on relationships before we even know who that person really is because we haven't gotten past the preliminary stages of relationship with them. So it's really important to help your MKs to understand that time and commitment and patience are going to be their friend on their way to friendships that are meaningful. We also, as adults of influence, need to convince them that we do have something to gain from being friends with people who have not crossed their state lines. That doesn't make them insignificant, it doesn't make them less valuable. We actually have a lot to gain from understanding what it feels like to have a monocultural life, a stable life. And they have much to gain from learning from us what it means to have an international life. The usual conversational kind of order is this, the levels of intimacy. And for MKs, those last three, feelings, memories, and full disclosure, that's what we think is cliche level. It is not. And so we might need to teach them what cliche level communication is. Whatever is the pop culture phenomenon of the moment, you might need to let them watch it on TV or listen to it on their whatever it is they listen to on these days. But to get familiar with what the talk is in their people groups so that they can interact on those topics that others will be talking about around them. It does not lessen them in any way to learn this language. So what are the side effects of relational differences? What are the dangers if we don't conform to the green line? And I'm going to step back just for 1 minute and add this. The green line is common to most monocultural settings, but it's going to look different. The French are very standoffish initially, and you know they're being standoffish until you get down that line long enough to get a little bit warmer with them. Americans are confusing because we talk really fun and friendly, and you're my best friend, and I love you so much, but there's still the standoffishness underneath that. So it can be very confusing to MKs. So it's important to understand that that green line doesn't look like coldness. It's just the depth to which people are willing to go. So side effects of relational differences, one of them is attracting the needy. In a monocultural setting, the people who do things as intensely as we do often are the broken and the needy. And so MKs will end up with a stable of friends who are all the fringe elements of the culture they're in because only they do things the intense way we do. So that can be difficult. Encouraging them to wait for the right friend rather than jump in and intensely identify with somebody who does it like them can be really helpful. Scaring others off. We're so intense. They don't know what to do with us when we start, you know, showing our guts in conversation to them. So we end up actually antagonizing people to some degree. Sharing with people who are not trustworthy. Until we get down that green line a certain distance, we don't know who that person really is underneath all of that. So if we're, and MKs, again, we're too likely to share important stuff about ourselves. If we say that to somebody that we haven't vetted yet by going down that green line, I have known MKs who have had their most private things published on social media because we didn't know yet whether that person was safe or not. So it's really important, again, to have that patience. And finally, creating misunderstandings. I was at a speaking at a gathering of college-age MKs. It's called Snow Camp in the Midwest every year, talking about this. And as I got to this topic, everybody started pointing to the guy in the back row who was from Moody Bible Institute, red-faced. He knew what was coming. And they told his story. And he had gone to Moody. He was doing things the MK way. He was having study meetings at the coffee shop and having lunch with people and whatever and just interacting in the way that he had always interacted, talking about his inner stuff and his vulnerabilities and his strengths. And challenges, and he had found out that week, as had all of his friends who were there attending this conference with him, that there were two girls on campus who thoroughly expected him to propose to them that week. He was approaching the end of the year. He had been so verbally intimate, by American standards, with them, and he did not understand that in this culture, verbal intimacy equals romantic intimacy. So MKs who are used to sharing verbally of their inner stuff don't realize that they're sending the message that we are in a romantic relationship. And I am pursuing you by sharing my inner self with you. Really important to let them know that that's the way it's going to be. It's going to be interpreted. Do you have any questions on this part of this session? Or anything to add? Or any illustrations to offer? No? To some degree, missionaries who are monocultural and have added cultures will eventually become more like this in our relational styles too. So I think it's important for us as well to make sure that we're honoring the green line. And I told the MKs this morning, it's okay to every so often see if you can go a little bit deeper faster. And if they follow, great. Do it incrementally. Don't freak them out. And if you try to go a little bit deeper or a little bit faster and they don't follow, that's okay. Back to the green line. But it's okay as well to look for the exception to the norm, because there are exceptions in the North American culture of really good people who will want to enter into deeper relationship more quickly than the average people do. Anything else to add? Yes, please. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. And a good way to approach any of these topics with the kids is actually to approach it from the vantage point of their great strength, which is cultural adaptability. So telling them, you're an MK, you get the cultural difference. In this culture, this is the way we do things, and it actually keeps you safer to do it this way initially. So calling on something that they know to be a strength of theirs and just kind of applying it to this area, rather than saying, oh, watch out, you're going to get burned if you do this. Very good point. Thank you. Just as kind of managing the risk of entering relationships the way that we're used to doing it. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 It's normal. Yes. 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 Yeah. 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 Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 It's really important when we talk about their differences to talk about them as differences and not weirdnesses or flaws or quirks. And to explain to them that, of course, you're doing it this way because now you have all this information. Because all of these makes it obvious that you would do this. So it's a logical conclusion that your way of entering into relationships or that your way of being cultural or of entering new circumstances, that all of that is absolutely logical and it makes sense. It's not going to make sense to people who are not like you, and that's okay. But you are the logical conclusion of the way that you have grown up. And to try and not use those words, I can tell by looking at you that you would never use that. Yes. 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 Yeah. 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 Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where the beads and the purple comes in, right? Looking at the purple MK from a beads perspective, it does look weird. But if we can understand the purple as we've been trying to do today, then it's logical. Then it makes sense that they are the way they are. And then you can work with that in a constructive way rather than a corrective way, right? Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult. Yes. Well, I don't know. Maybe you. I don't ever want to fix anything. Yes. Why do you think I do what I do? Yeah. It's true. It's true. Anything else? I alluded to it, but I can allude to it a little bit more. So we really are good at what I call, and I need to find a better term for it, but the seduction stage. When you're first meeting somebody, you're kind of walking around each other, figuring each other out. Are you going to be my friend? Are you not going to be my friend? And then those first intense couple of years of relationship, which are wonderful, and it's all the honeymoon period, even in regular friendships. And then when that takes a little bit longer, when the immediacy of the excitement of this new thing, the new adventure, starts to wane, then we either try to find ways of bringing adventure into that relationship so it feels exciting again, or we slowly lose interest in, this is the worst case scenario, or we slowly lose interest in the relationship because it isn't feeding that excitement of those first days anymore. So as I work with MKs who have grown and married, many of them, especially those with the overdeveloped wings, have found frustration in predictability. We've been married for 10 years. We've been married for 15 years. Will we ever move? Will we ever experience something new? I know you really well now. I have no new parts of me to reveal to you. So MKs who really find the definition of relationship in everything that's included in that first year or two are going to struggle with everything that comes after the first year or two. So if we can help them to understand by example, for those of you who are in long-term relationships, and by talking it through the value of long-term sticking with somebody because you love them, and the fact that the feeling of love is going to change over time, that will help them to manage these long-term relationships that they have. I have found that an awful lot of adult MKs will need some counseling to help them through that after maybe 5-10 years of marriage, and then especially if they've married a non-MK, that's often when that friction starts to turn up because the honeymoon phase is over. Okay. Anything else? Yes. They want to move at least every 2 years, if not every year. They need to keep flitting. They need to keep getting places, experiencing new stuff. And a lot of adults, non-MK people are the same way. MKs take greater pride in that. It's one of our MK traits that we have to keep moving. So they're going to be a little bit more prone to do that, except if they're MKs like me who dig down roots and don't you dare ask me to move. I lived in a horrible apartment in Germany for 20 years that my mom, I now know, hated, but it was home to me and I was not going to, you know, uplift my roots anymore. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Okay, let's go on to catalysts. This is the part I love because this is the superpower that MKs have that actually comes from not belonging, which seems contradictory, but let me walk you through it. This book was one of my favorites when I was little, and it took me until my adult years to figure out why. Any of you familiar with Are You My Mother? So this little bird falls out of his nest and can't find his mom, can't find his place of belonging, and goes around for the rest of the book to there was a dog, there was a cow, there was a tractor saying, are you my mother? Are you my place of belonging? Am I one of you? And I think the reason I loved that book so much when I was little is that it reflected some of what I felt like growing up as a Canadian-American French MK, trying to figure out who my people are because straddling is so uncomfortable sometimes, straddling all of these different people groups. Are any of you old enough to be familiar with the movie Ghost? Patrick Swayze. Okay, so Ghost is kind of stuck between two worlds. This is a little illustration. I found this on TV when I was watching a silly sitcom, but I think it expresses that lack of full belonging in a beautiful way.
We did it, Lois. We moved to America, and we made it. As soon as we move back here, you would miss it over there.
And as soon as we go back there, you know you're going to miss it here.
Well, maybe we'll never feel completely at home in either place.
We are Ghost. We are Patrick Swayze and Ghost, stuck between two worlds, part of both, belonging to neither.
It is the best movie ever.
Are you like that? Do you see something and you go, ooh, that's me. I recognize that. So many of us feel like we are kind of not... we're not eliminated from different worlds, but we're kind of ghost-like in multiple worlds, which is a weird state to be. I was at Moody a few years back during a conference, a missionary conference, and there were signs out on the sidewalk, and this man who had been walking down the street saw the signs, walked in, came to my book table, and I found out that he was an adult MK. He was probably, I'd say, in his late 50s at the time. He had come back from Central America, I believe. He had his own business, his fleet of cars, wife, children, picket fence, some kind of beautiful dog, I'm sure. He had everything that anchors a person to a culture and a place. He had achieved the American dream. And just as he was turning around to leave, I said, so how does being an MK still impact you today? And this man who has everything, his eyes filled with tears, and he said, I still don't feel like I belong anywhere. He had established himself in the American culture in ways few MKs managed to, and still didn't feel like he belonged there. So yes, living on the edge of multiple cultures has its challenges. And yes, we are so privileged and blessed to be living on the edge of those cultures. We just need to learn how to manage what that little bird was feeling, and that is the lack of belonging anywhere. Now, MKs who feel unbelonging, that's the word I'm going to use, tend to respond in one of three ways to it. The first is to conform. This is the MK who will release whatever it is that ties him or her to another culture in order to look and talk and feel as much as possible like the culture they're currently in. It looks a little bit like this, if you can find the MK hiding among those straight-edge screws. The advantage of that is that you do find belonging. The disadvantage is you have had to amputate so many pieces of yourself to get there that some of the richness of growing up MK gets lost in the shuffle, in your reducing yourself to belong in a certain setting. And then there's the unconforming MK. I'm pretty sure many of you have known some of these. This is the MK who says, you know what, they say I'm weird on that side of the ocean, and they say I'm weird on this side of the ocean. Let me show you weird. And they go out of their way to be as different as they can be, which again is that weird backwards thinking of, if I don't try to fit in, I won't fail to fit in, and that feels safer somehow than attempting. And the third one, which is the one I preach actually, is straddling cultures. It is not the most comfortable approach to belonging. If you do it long enough, you can actually kind of fall into a light sleep while straddling. The goal of this approach is to mostly belong. Our superpower of MKs is being able to mostly belong in multiple places. There are very few people who can do that. So it looks something like this. If I am able to mostly belong in France, mostly belong in Germany, mostly belong in Canada, and mostly belong in the States, I have the superpower of being able to adapt and broaden my pie chart for wherever place I'm in. So according to this pie chart, if I were to move to planet red, I could keep little slivers of my other colors and broaden the red until I mostly belonged in planet red. And then when I moved to planet green, I would reduce the red back to a normal, manageable piece of myself and broaden my green so I would mostly belong in that place. It allows us to keep connected to all the pieces that have shaped us, which is a beautiful thing that is so rare in this world. And it allows us to actually be functional in the places that we enter for any length of time. If you know of any MKs who have been on public transit or on the streets of a city and they met somebody from their other culture and they got to speak in that language to them and help them to find their way if they were lost, or translate a menu for them, it just feels so life-giving because they have kept connected and they still mostly belong in that place too. So changing, we are built for full belonging. We are built, we want 100% belonging somewhere because of the safe sense of safety and self that we derive from that. So if we can change the way we talk about it and convince ourselves and our MKs that our superpower is actually not belonging in one place, but mostly belonging in multiple places, then we're empowering them to hold on to those facets of themselves that make them who they are, use them for others, and not lose anything in the process. There's this statue in southern France, I believe it's in the city of Marseille, that I think illustrates what happens when we try to fully belong as MKs. This actually is a 14-foot solid metal statue, so just the engineering that went into creating this is impressive. But this is a man who has amputated parts of himself in order to try and find wholeness, and the losses that are involved in that are huge. So that is what, here's a different angle. That is what some MKs have tried to do, and I do believe that they've lost pieces of themselves in the process. Any questions or something to add on this piece? Okay, let's go on to our other superpower. Anybody hear of the cluster theory before? Okay, it's actually well-researched. There's a lot of articles and resources on this. So it goes like this. In a static environment, so we're talking about a city block or a church or a business office, in a static environment, people who are alike are going to gravitate towards each other. So imagine in this chart that it might be the administrators, the tech help, and the researchers. They're naturally going to gravitate towards each other. And the person in the middle of the cluster is going to be the most highly identified piece of that. So the most administrator-y person will be in the middle of that administrative cluster. And then you enter into that the MKs, who have multiple ways of viewing the world and entering into a relationship with people. In fact, one of the great frustrations of MKs in high school is that they don't fit neatly into a group. They will be part of the chess club and the skater club and the go smoke under the bleachers club. Maybe not. But they navigate so easily between people groups that they can't be highly identified, and they're certainly not going to be in the middle of one of those clusters because that feels claustrophobic for them. So they enter this with colors from all of the clusters, and we're going to be edge dwellers. We're going to live around the edges of these groups for a while because it's comfortable, because we can still navigate between groups if we do that. And the beauty of TCKs and MKs is that if they're there long enough, if they allow relationships to naturally develop and they slowly reveal who they are to these clusters, they can have this impact on them. We can be the bridge builders who move static environments into more diverse, both in people and in thoughts and in solutions. We have the ability to do that because of the complexity and confusion and conflictedness that we have derived from growing up MK. So this is why TCKs, if you have MKs who are looking for jobs, make sure they put down that they're third culture kids and that they have functioned in other societies and cultures, because they are highly sought in the work environment right now, because bosses are starting to understand, as our culture diversifies, that they need these bridge builders. They need people who can understand all sides and pull people towards each other. What we manage to do if we use these strengths well is expand the viewpoints of people who have been kind of stuck in one thinking mode for a long time. We can encourage risk taking. We can say, I know that it's comfortable to do it this way, but I've seen it done this way and it works. Do you want to give it a shot? We can prove the efficacy of different methods. We can point them to those other places we've known where it has been done and prove to them that it can be done. We can instigate change in change of averse environments. We can introduce innovation, and we can build bridges between clusters. This really is, in my opinion, the highest prize that MKs have to offer the world, is this ability to be edge dwellers, which feels a little isolated, even though it's by choice a lot of times, because from the edges we can affect the culture and the subculture. So what does it take for MKs to do this well, to be good edge dwellers and bridge builders? Number one, valuing edge dwelling. This is where the input of their adults of influence is going to be really important to help them work through and celebrate the great stuff and identify the great stuff so that they can point at it and say, yes, this is what I got from being an MK. And also to work through the other stuff so that they aren't held down by the hardships of being an MK. In my mind, the picture I have is a young girl, an MK, who in one hand has a bunch of helium balloons. That's the wonderful stuff that pulls her upward into flourishing. But then on the other hand, there's this anvil that's kind of chained to her wrist. And if we can take care of the anvil part, if we can find the lock to get her wrist free, then she can thrive and she can bloom in the way that she needs to. So part of valuing edge dwelling is working through that tension and finding the flourishing on the one side. Number two, gradually reveal their cross-cultural backgrounds. It's that green line all over again, but in a different context. It's walking in, it's reading the room, it's learning the way things are done, it's figuring out why things are done that way historically, and then dropping little hints along the way of, you know what, I've lived in other places, I've seen this done differently, I wonder if... And slowly planting seeds in the leaders' minds of this new situation they're in that will make them consider making changes. So important to resist judging. The only way that they can be efficace, what's the word in English? Efficace, effective, thank you, at the work they're doing or at the changes they're implementing is if they don't indict an entire culture for being stupid and doing things wrong. And man, I was really good at that in my early adulthood. It's all I did for 3.5 years of college, which was look for ways Americans were wrong and harp on it. So resisting judging them just as we wouldn't judge the other cultures. If you take an MK and drop them into an Amazonian tribe, they will find a way to exist in that tribe. They will figure out why things go the way they do, and they will find their way into it. With our passport cultures, it's much more difficult for us to have the will to do that. So reminding them that they have that ability. And finally, being patient. Influence takes time. They have lots of time. And embracing our unbelonging in the sense that it is our superpower and that it is a gift given to us by our parents and by the God who called our parents can change the way that we enter the world and, and change the way that we influence the world. Now, I promised you that I would give you Caleb's part two of his spoken word. So that's coming. But first, I want to read you this quote, which to me summarizes what my prayer is for every MK that I cross paths with and for the families of MKs that I cross paths with. It is this: I am an MK, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. This is the goal, right, to hear an MK saying this. I am a globetrotter with more adventure in my memory trove than anyone not blessed with a worldwide stomping ground. Whatever it is, I've seen it, tasted it, climbed it, explored it, and survived it. I've managed to grow straight and strong despite my tangled, far-flung roots. I've celebrated my uniqueness and learned to accept its limitations. I found God, too, at every unexpected turn into more challenging unknown. I'm sometimes bruised, sometimes confused, but always grateful for a life so enriched and blessed by living between worlds. I am an MK. So here's Caleb, and at the end of Caleb, we'll have just a few minutes for any kind of questions or additions you might have. Here's the second part.
My name is John, and my faith is my own. I don't have a physical home, but I know that no matter where I go, my heart has a place to rest. That the crest of each mountain I climb, there's a downhill I can ride, and in both, God follows close. So now my heart can boast of being healed, that it is full and reeled closer and closer to God's own heart. A friend that will never leave, a love that will never depart, and I can share that. And share it like beauty and art, plastered to the walls of my actions to take stands with the factions of people I had to say goodbye to. My name's John, and I'm gonna be gone soon. But first, this is my heart. I'll take it to show and tell so the great work of God can be told, and I'll hold it high so people cannot deny that it's whole. And when I say my goodbye, I can say it without the lie of numbness. I can say it without the pain that's loveless.
Anything to add? Any questions to ask? Anything that you think, you know what, I'm going to talk to my kids about this, that you want to share with the group? Yes. Oh, good. Excellent. Good. Thank you. Thank you. And that's up there because I am reachable at any point, even after this week. Anything else? I do need to tell you that my website, I've just glanced on these, as I mentioned earlier, and there are whole articles on each one of these topics, plus a multitude of other topics. And again, if you have missionaries or MKs, they tend nowadays, MKs especially, to be more listeners than readers. So if there's something that you want somebody to hear, send them the link. Each article has the link to the podcast episode that is associated with it, which is just the article being read by me. It's not interviews, it's just articles, the audio version. So that might be, especially for young people, the better way to get them to get some information about things they might not necessarily be looking for. Anything else? MichellePhoenix.com. Yeah. Is it up there? Oh, I forgot to put it up there. I'll correct that for tomorrow. Yes. I don't know. Contradictory. That's the flip sides. Culturally complex, that's the three different cultures. Conflicted, that's the grief part that we didn't really go into much today. And then, what's the relationship one? Condensed is the relationship one, because they do things so quickly. And then catalysts is the, is the last bit that we went over. Okay, if there's nothing else, I'm going to close us in prayer. And then, of course, you can reach me anytime, and we can continue the conversation outside of this room. So let me pray. Jesus, I thank you that if anybody gets being from multiple places at the same time, it is you, and that when you left one realm to enter another, you too had adjustments to make and limitations to find. And I pray that the MKs that I spoke with this morning and their parents who are here this week, that we would all have a deeper understanding of both the greatness and the joy and the richness of being MKs and of the challenges that sometimes come along with it too. I pray for courage to open hard conversations, for gentle words to talk about hard truths, and for hearts that radiate your love and your care and your own hurting heart for your children, especially those, in my mind, who have been drafted into service. Thank you that you are a God of faithfulness and understanding and compassion and comfort and courage. In your name, amen.